So what we'll have together, we'll flow into a meditation. I'd like to offer a little reflection that's related to that meditation. And then if I can, you know, keep it short enough, then we could have some questions and your own reflections around that kind of a theme or anything else that's coming up. And then for the last 15 minutes, we'll have time for those who wish to stay on and have some small group meetings, which are really also a really kind of beautiful way of doing this. So before I say anything at all about the theme and the practice that I'm thinking of, I'm really keen that we actually just share our own intentions. Like, what's it that moves you to come here today? What are you looking for? What are you looking to bring into being? What are you looking to support in yourself, in the world, in your family and friends, in your location? What is it you'd like to offer or make from this time or tune into? We have freedom, inner space to set the day, intentionality, steadiness, beautiful, inner calm, grounding, finding energy, connection, kindness, self-care, very, very beautiful, hope, spaciousness, metta, remembering myself, connection with Sangha, inspiration, self-empathy, settling, and a reminder for myself and maybe for all of us, as we hear, read, sense into those words, really letting them land. These are actually someone's deepest wishes, probably resonate with our deepest wishes. Strength for myself so I can be there for others. It's compassion. Creativity. Home. Maybe as we just welcome those feelings, welcome those resonances, welcome those intentions, actually begin to let the chat go quiet. If you're typing something in, feel free to finish it. And letting that intention rest in the heart. Even letting it fill our awareness as we let go of everything unnecessary and just tune into what's supportive of that intention. Flow into this meditation. We'll have a meditation together, about 20 minutes of practice. I really feel invited to do your own practice in your own way. And I'll offer some guidance, particularly around kind of a listening meditation. If you prefer to be doing something else, really do feel free. Just begin, before listening to sounds, just listening to the body. Listening if there's anything in the body that needs any adjustment to support us. The body feel well balanced. Listening, but also just making those small adjustments, forward, backwards, side to side, till we find some way we can really rest into. relax into. That doesn't mean that any tension has to disappear, but just that we sort of allow it to remain. Before we begin listening to sounds, we might also just listen to the breath as a way of tuning in. Listening to the relaxation of the out-breath. Listening to the subtle energization of the in-breath. Almost as if we're listening to a piece of music that has a rhythm. We listen, maybe just opening the range if that in-breath wants to come deeper, or that out-breath wants to be more profound. As we feel quite rested and steady in the body, it's an invitation to invite the quality of listening to spread out into the world, really with a sense like a dish, a receptive dish that's picking up the vibrations of sound in our environment. That spirit of vibration, if we can get in beneath the labels, really into the vibration of sounds, how is this heard? How is it to hear this? What is this? Each time we hear something and it's one of those. What is it? What's it really like to listen with a deeper intimacy to this vibration? So you may notice that certain sounds hook attention and pull attention with it. Certain sounds don't. But beneath that, they're all just vibrations. Time we get hooked, can we just notice, what's this vibration like? Open up to the vibration within the sound, within the label. Surrendering to not knowing, not needing to know, just for a while. Any time again, we can just relax and open wide this attention to the realm of sounds. The vibrations. It's like a river of sounds flowing through. Wide and free of preference our listening can be. also notice that when you listen with sensitivity, even that which we call a vibration is itself made up of movement, these fluctuations. So it's subtler and subtler. Everything made up, this coming and going, quite ephemeral, quite light. There's no rush to hear it all. Can we relax and open? Somehow wider, somehow deeper perspective. Let the belly out, let the listening go wide. Primarily making our home in the auditory, in the hearing realm, ears out wide. If the attention lands somewhere in the body, something happening in the body, life calling attention. Very gently, if you wish, can we also see that as a vibration made up of fluctuation? We're drawn into a thought or a feeling, a memory, a fantasy. Can we also see that's also an energy, also a vibration? Something we can listen to with this wide, relaxed, deep, open attention. whatever's in attention, some kind of vibration. How's your listening? So I hope that's was an enjoyable session of practice. Felt very relaxing and sensitive for me. And just as the bell that I just rang is kind of still very subtly vibrating, maybe our practice can also, you know, just continue to subtly vibrate on and on for the rest of the session, for the rest of the day. Be something we can tune back into at any time. So it's a real pleasure to be here, and I feel, you know, very respectful to the silence that we've just created together, and to speak into it is a real honor. And so the first thing I want to say is, you know, to kind of honor Gaia House for offering us this space, offering us this location for connectivity. And as many of you will know, it's not an easy time to be running a physical retreat center, and so that they are, you know, out putting out these offerings, offering this space, this online Dharma hall where we can join together, online retreats. So if you would like to support Gaia House at this time, you can return to the page that you came from to click through to get into the online Dharma hall and offer them some support, and that would be really deeply appreciated by them and also by myself, that we're supporting them in these uncertain times. But with that, really understanding that, you know, it's a universally uncertain, turbulent time that we're living through, and if it's not an easy time for you, and there isn't, you know, the feeling that, you know, there's much that you can spare, then there's no expectation to do that. But there's also no lower limit, you know. It's not like, oh, you know, we don't want small donations. Like, kind of collectively, we can give small things and they'll go a long way in terms of support. And there's also the possibility, if you would like to, you can also support me for the teachings that I come here to offer. You know, that's also, you know, I'm coming here freely offered and without any expectations of anything in return. If it so moves you that you would like to offer something back to me, it's deeply appreciated. And you can either do that through the Gaia House website, or what actually might be easier for you is to use one of my websites, which I'll just put that into the chat, which might even be a fun website to look at on a Sunday, lazy Sunday. It's all about dependent origination, you know, this kind of emptiness teachings, how everything is flexible and fluid and perception is malleable. So yeah, if you want to, you can dive into that. And on there's kind of a place where you can give donations through bank transfer and credit card and things like that, and I don't collect any data, so it's maybe slightly swifter for you, but that's just offered freely in the same spirit as the dana. You know, your dana is offered freely, and this session is offered freely, and Gaia House is offering this freely. And the main thing is to feel that this is your place for Dharma. Yeah. You're always welcome here. It's not, no price, no expectation, totally free. So I really wanted to do one of these kind of just full-on listening meditation sessions, because I actually think a lot about the dependent origination of distraction. You know, that it's a really important question for me, that we actually make this thing called distraction once we choose a certain type of object. You know, we often pick quite a subtle object in meditation. One from familiar one to all of us will be, you know, coming to the breath. And, you know, the breath just does its thing, and funnily enough, the more relaxed you pay attention to the breath, the more subtle it becomes, the less easy it is to stay with that object as it gets subtler and subtler. And at some point in your meditation practice, you may even notice it just seems to disappear completely. You know, it seems like body's still breathing. You know, some people might say, oh, the breath's not beating, you know, there's no breath or something like this. But, you know, whatever it is, it's very, very hard to stay with that subtle object. But luckily, certain things in meditation support us through that journey. But whether we're a beginner or, you know, hyper-advanced meditator, we will get these things called distraction, because distraction dependently arises once there's an object, right? And the mind wanders, the mind's creative, the mind develops. And so what happens when the mind wanders? Like, how do we respond? Yeah. How do we respond? Now, of course, some of the time we're just completely lost. Okay, and it's kind of like, so there's nothing, no particular response at all. We're just, you know, in that thought, in that fantasy, we're off in that world. You know, we can be on like such a train of thought that's so, feels so important on some level to follow, yeah, that we don't even notice that every so often the train stops at a platform, we get off the train, and then we just get on the next train. As soon as there's a train leaving, you know, it's like we've got this rail pass on the train of thought, you know, we're just on the train network of thought, and we're just going and going and going. But every so often, you know, we'll notice, oh, I'm back on the platform. That, you know, where am I? What's going on? And how we respond, right, will also depend how eager we are to get on another train. Yeah, like, you know, there's this kind of example around kind of puppy training or something, but we don't want to get too many metaphors going on. But like, you know, if you keep punishing the puppy, then it will just get scared of you and just kind of run away. And the same way, if we come back from distraction, we're like, you know, bad puppy, and we're quite likely to jump on the next train out of town, you know. Whereas if it's something kind, something gentle, something supportive, then maybe we would actually stay on that platform for longer. And that platform representing the mindful, the present, also the realm of possibility. Yeah, the realm of possibility of different ways of perceiving, different ways of developing our practice. Now, over time, we do want to be able to sustain our attention more and more, right? We do want this kind of relaxed, sustained attention, which hopefully some of us got a taste of in this kind of listening practice, yeah? The attention was actually quite sustained. It was quite relaxed. Anything that arose was a vibration. So it's in, it's fair game, it's not a distraction. You know, it could be body screaming, great, okay, vibrations of body screaming. Thought fantasies going on, okay, interesting, vibrations of thought, energy, you can listen. So we kind of step outside of that game. But even then, you know, we might find at certain times these inclinations towards kind of greedy or aversive mind states will arise. Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, gone here, gone there. And the distraction is actually a wonderful time to notice what's the inclination of the mind today. Yeah. Is it, oh, I want a bit more distractions. That'll help the time pass better. You know, or is it, you know, this is rubbish, you know, I'm terrible, blaming myself, blaming the mind for doing its thing. You say, oh yeah, it's a bit of aversive stuff going on today. Really good to know it, yeah. And whether we go down this avenue of, you know, kind of getting despondent, getting disappointed, blaming, Or we're more in that side of like really enjoying, relishing, just like wanting to almost like feed our addiction for fantasy. It's dukkha, right? That's dukkha. So we've added this element of dukkha in the way that we're relating to this fabrication of distraction in our practice. And so what I like about the listening practice, it doesn't have quite so much dukkha because that you can't really get distracted from listening. You know, if the neighbors are moving furniture and you're trying to pay attention to your breath, it might be difficult, lots of distraction. If you're just listening, so oh, they can keep moving the furniture. This is a great object. Isn't it interesting? Like scratching wood on tiles, you know, it all just opens up. Or for me, the personal one is I really don't like this idea that people have these reverse vacuum cleaners and are blowing leaves around the neighborhood instead of sweeping them up. You know, it's like, oh, aversion. But then, you know, so okay, switch to listening meditation. It's just a very interesting vibration. So, always worth putting in the sidebar there. We're not looking just to become really, really passive around things, but we do want to have that within our toolbox so that we don't create extra agitation. Now, coming back to those aversive or greedy kind of mind states, what you'll know is, you know, the Buddha was calling these poisons, poisons because they lead to dukkha. They are dukkha in their arising. And so the really important missing middle between these modes is that both of them are dependent on identification. So say like it's our thoughts which are distracting us, right? It feels like these are my thoughts. Right, and once they feel like my thoughts, then it really feels like they're able to distract me, or I'm able to distract me. And then we particularly get into this blame kind of game. Or, oh, I really like this thought that I'm having, you know, like, oh, I must tell someone else about this, and then that fantasy goes on. So there's kind of a certain dependency on identification with the thoughts. And so one of the really skillful ways is a kind of anatta type of strategy towards these that actually opens out something quite different. So that is to say, purposefully seeing these are not my thoughts. These are not my thoughts. And sometimes it's just helpful to kind of rationally explain it to ourselves, right? For example, these thoughts are occurring to us. Okay? They're something that are occurring in your awareness. In a certain sense, they're just like the sounds. Thoughts and sounds, there's not a great deal of difference. When the neighbors are moving furniture, I don't think this is my wood scraping against the tile. You know, but then a thought comes up about it, and it's like, oh, this is my thought about that thing. But where did that thought come? You know, it dependently arose. If you kind of trace it back, you know, where did it come from? How was it made? So it's actually not me, it's known by me. And it comes and goes. Right? So it's not myself because it comes and goes, and yet I feel, you know, momentarily affected by it, but not radically changed by its arising and passing. It's not like, oh, there's less of me now because I'm not thinking that thought. And yet, when we don't investigate it, it can be a lot of identification. So, you know, when we start talking about anatta in just a very kind of colloquial way, in a relaxed way, like we're speaking about it now, there can be this kind of feeling that there's this disassociation. And it's really important to be clear that, you know, we're not saying that the thoughts that occur to you are in some way occurring to everyone, and, you know, they are known personally by you, or so it seems. And they're only known to other people when we express them or we act upon them in this way. So there's some personal relationship that we have with them. But it can be helpful to use that in the meditation to understand, ah, oh, actually, there's not this total fusion with this experience. And so what we would say is that this is a skillful lens to look at our experience through. Skillful lens to look at experience through. And so we're supporting the idea that we don't have ownership of these thoughts or these feelings. And because of the way that perception is empty, empty of being a certain way, when we bring that lens of perception in, it actually gives us a lot more freedom of how I can relate to these thoughts, how these thoughts start to appear. Yeah. And so we can then switch to kind of seeing thoughts as energy, right? Just as we were doing in the last parts of that meditation, which may or may not make any sense at this point. And we'll see if we manage to make any sense out of it. So we don't make thoughts. We don't even really select the thoughts. Yeah. As anyone who knows who's kind of woken up and decided today, it's positive thinking day, always good on a Sunday. So we won't be having any of those, you know, harsh thoughts about, you know, our neighbours and ourselves and our children and parents and politicians and all the rest, yeah. Good luck. So in a certain sense, it's a question, how do we listen to the thoughts? How do we listen to sounds? You know, thoughts, this kind of energy we pick up on, condense around, but actually they just rise, they occur, and we tune into or out of them. Yeah, it's possible just to tune out of that range of thoughts. Yeah. If you don't bring your attention to a thought, does that thought exist? You know, it's much like that kind of tree falling in the woods and no one's listening. If no one's listening to this thought, does it exist or does it not exist? There might be a thought happening now that's not being listened to. Yeah, it's a possibility. So what is it? Is it happening or not happening? If no one listens to it. If we tune out from that thought, say like thoughts are going on, I tune into my knees or the bottom of my feet or something like this. Without that attention, thoughts are dependently arising. They're dependent on attention. And they're dependent on types of attention. So this non-identification type of attention, thoughts change, they become more ephemeral and they may even just disappear. So this comes back to kind of like the core question, no matter what's going on, our work, so to say, as meditators, is to meet well. You know, that's more or less the practice, yeah? Meet well. Because the most important and the most influential part of any experience is how we're meeting it. Yeah. So that's why in this meditation session, and probably in most meditation sessions that anyone guides anywhere, yeah, the first thing to remember is actually to relax. Okay. So once something comes up and it triggers us, you know, it's not so humanly normal to say, okay, first I'm going to relax, then I'm going to give some space. Then I'm gonna engage with this. You know, it's much more. It's the rush. Okay, problem. I think I know what to do. You know, and we throw whatever it is onto it. So as we relax that body, we can actually relax the demand for something else. Ah, oh, so it should be something else right now. Just relaxing that, even if it's kind of like for that thought-free experience. Yeah. Can we just relax that? Because we don't want this feeling of rejection to come into this liberating perception, yeah, which could be, I'm not my thoughts. Yeah, these are something to relate to. And it's a liberating perception because it's actually more lovely and delightful to regard our thoughts without identification. Yeah. And so there isn't a subtle rejection here even, like, oh, you know, do this and the thoughts will go away. That kind of like subtle strategizing comes in at times. Yeah. It's much more, I know a way that I could meet these that aren't going to cause distress and disturbance. No way of remaining sensitive, remaining open, actually being able to be intimate with the feeling of thoughts arising and leaving, sensitive to that whole space this experience is actually happening in. Yeah. And so in a certain sense, this whole way, which is tuned in with a sense of like letting go of control. Yeah, the control sense is like these thoughts are in, these thoughts are out, you know, shaping my experience. I'm paying attention to breath, I'm thinking about this, you know, I'm paying attention to listening. It's just, these things are not welcome. In a sense, we're kind of offering up that control. And so this is getting to the heart of what I want to touch on, is like we're actually flowing from this kind of anatta kind of lens into something that I also think is really helpful to have in our toolbox, which is this surrender, like a sense of surrender. Yeah. And again, I'm not saying this is the way to live a life. Be really passive. Just keep surrendering. But it's useful because it's not kind of human automatic. Yeah. So it's useful to be able to turn that gear on at certain times. Yeah. So it's more like having all the gears than saying this is the best gear. You know, you'll find you get the furthest, or you know, you'll enjoy the ride the most with this. Now, I don't know if surrender sounds really, really attractive to people. Yeah. I see it as actually kind of relating to another pairing, which we might call devotion. And of course, like for some people, they would prefer devotion over surrender. Some people surrender over devotion. Some people hate both of them. Some people maybe love both of them, you know, but it's kind of interesting what these concepts do for us. And it's always interesting. What do we feel like we like? What do we feel like should be helpful and useful in our Dharma, and what doesn't? So we speak about this idea that we kind of like make sounds, we make thoughts, we make things because of this nature of fabrication. Yeah, we bring them into being. We make them by bringing attention to them, right? And the attention that we bring to them shapes how they appear. But after that, we could say, no, they're not made by us. Yeah, they're not made by us. They're just appearing, just occurring. Right. And those are contradictory senses, but we can have both, right? And so they're kind of like these different gears. Yeah. Does that make sense? Do we need to walk over that again? Is it making sense? Yeah. Okay. So just as a sound is a kind of a vibration in the air, which only appears that way because of our conception and our perception of it, which defines it into that kind of a thing. So if my mic was working too well, you would have heard a lot of traffic noise, because I have to have my window open because it's very hot today. And so you're getting a lot of honks if it's picking up the sounds. You'll get a lot of, you know, cars revving and starting and stopping and all of that. And so we could appear like we're just listening, and what I hear is there's a car. Maybe, you know, I don't want to hear a car. You know, that's unpleasant. And so these kind of like three aspects kind of arise together. And of course, I could change any of them. Yeah. For one, I could actually choose to see it as pleasant. It's like, oh, I like the sound of cars. You know, so that's kind of like first little bit of freedom. And then, you know, I could kind of pretend that I really do want to hear this. You know, instead of like, I don't want to hear it. It's like, yeah, I do want to hear this. I want to hear everything. I want to be aware of what's happening in my environment. Yeah. And then the next thing I can do, which is like we were doing in that meditation just now, is I could let go of the label. You know, I can just see it as a vibration, kind of glommed together as a separate thing. So I'm putting it within this framework of car. And so in a certain sense, it's that perception of car which is dependent for the other things. Once we get down to that level of vibration, is it that I don't want fluctuations in the airstream? Is that what's unpleasant? Yeah, because it's kind of, they're contained within the label. So we're kind of like, oh, dissolving things in this way. And so we kind of go down a level of subtlety with the listening. And I feel like something we should do at times. It's really a good way of relating to have in the toolbox. Yeah, can we begin to drop the need to label things? Or at least to see that it's a label, it's a labeled thing, and I'm relating to it in its labeled way. Yeah. It's not necessarily this from its own side. Yeah. And so letting go of that label is a certain kind of surrendering of knowing. Now, I know it's a car. You know, some certainly some of my friends would come back, yeah, but I know it's a car. It's like, yeah, but what if you didn't? No, but I know it's a car. Yeah, I know. But what if you just pretend that it's not a car? It's a vibration. And, you know, if you're willing to do it, it opens something else out. So we could say, you know, surrendering of our knowledge in this sense, yeah, it's relaxing, it's opening. But interestingly, it kind of takes strength and courage because it goes against the stream. And so you might think of surrender as kind of giving something up, you know, normally like, oh, I was losing and then I surrendered, you know. But it's actually paradoxically, surrender is a victorious position, yeah. If you're feeling strong enough in yourself, if you actually, in a certain sense, feel like you're winning at meditation, then you can surrender more. Yeah? If you feel like, you know, what else could I give up? Yeah. So again, you know, it's a necessary practice to have at times. It's not the answer. But it might get overlooked, so I just wanted to give it a little bit of attention there. So, can we regard any moment of distraction in that way? Yeah, that what arises. It's arising for us as a distraction because there's some push or pull on it, some drawing towards, yeah, some greed for having this experience, or some aversion pushing away this experience. But actually, underneath this label, what is this? What is this? And we can sink into that. And that works with all the things within the sense realm. Yeah. Now, another way that we might go down this avenue, and some of you will know about this teaching, we've certainly shared about it in the online Dharma hall, is, you know, there's kind of two sorts of thinking. You know, what's the karmic influence of this way of thinking? Yeah. So kind of step back just enough to see, oh, it's not me, it's not mine. It's a vibration. But where's it heading? Right? And it can be helpful at times in our relationship to distraction to just really switch to a question of who's starring in this thought pattern right now? And what's this all about? Notice the self in the story. Is it central? Is it demanding? Is it a poor me kind of story? Is it I'm great? Where's this heading? What's going on? And so in this two sorts of thinking modality, which we'll just touch on very, very briefly, you know, the Buddha suggests that, you know, our inclination is likely in one of three pairs. So the two sorts is like either it's kind of a sense desire, greediness kind of thing going on, or it's some form of ill will, aversion and rejection, or even like harming, violence, dominion over others. Yeah, you know, it's this, that's a whole sort of thinking. Greed, aversion, harming, yeah. And on the other side, there's this kind of renunciation, generosity, or kindness, welcoming, allowing, thoughts that are inclined towards compassion, or forgiveness, or support. And that's a whole other side of thinking. And so we can just kind of quickly check in, you know, like, is there kindness, or is there kind of a lack of kindness in my thinking right now? Because that's the karmic influence. And so the Buddha, you know, broke it down really simply for us in this sense. It's like, basically, is our thinking leading to dukkha, vexation, distress, agitation for us, for others, for the world? Or is it leading to good energy, calmfulness, peacefulness, all of these kind of qualities? Yeah. So we just see that as a way, and the Buddha would say, you know, once you see that, you actually pull out that energy that's going into that way of thinking. And, as we said, the thought that is not thought, yeah, the thought that's not supported by thinking evaporates. It's extinguished. disappears. And then he comes in again and he's saying, yes, yeah, so that's good. So now we're getting good thinking going on. So we're kind of transforming our thoughts of like, ah, oh, but maybe, you know, thoughts of harmfulness, actually, can I lean them towards compassion? Oh, my thoughts of aversion, could I lean them towards kindness? My thoughts of greediness, could I lean them towards generosity? Yeah. And now we're having thoughts of generosity, of kindness, of welcoming, of forgiveness, of support. It's actually really wholesome, really healing to kind of linger there. But then the Buddha says that's still going to tire the mind out. Yeah, it's still going to hinder us from full liberation. So having gotten our thought thinking into a calmer place, can we also let go of that, surrender of that? Yeah, bring in the breath, the body relaxation, bring in that mental atmosphere of surrender. Maybe even most of the attention now is on that flavor of surrender, not on the thoughts, not even on the breath or the meditative object. Say this surrender is like letting go of that sense or giving away our illusion of control. And so I saw there was a question came up in the chat about, you know, what's this devotion to that we might say, you know. So like there's this kind of flip side between kind of surrender and devotion. So if we start off with something that's maybe more familiar, you know, because they might be kind of too vague, the overlap there. The opposite of sensual greed, you know, getting more sense pleasures into our world, is kind of renunciation or generosity. Now, renunciation is giving something up, yeah, and generosity is giving something away. But they're both not greed, right? But they're actually quite different. And they can kind of resonate with us in different ways at different times, yeah. And in some ways, you know, generosity is going to be more powerful at certain times. At other times, you know, the renunciation, the letting go, the giving up of something is going to be more powerful, more challenging, more transformative. So surrender, in a sense, is, you know, kind of letting go of control, letting go of this, what's here. I let that go, surrender. But maybe we're surrendering to something. And in that sense, it's a devotional practice. We're devoted to something. But what is this thing that we're devoted to? I would say it's something also that's empty. It's probably something we're imagining as really important for us to be devoted to. It's not necessarily something taken as real. And you can find your own location on that. Yeah, it's actually really helpful for me to feel that, you know, this thing I'm devoted to is really real. But for me, the main practice is, as I was saying, it's like it's on the surrender. So it's kind of like the devotion is kind of coming through and that object is there so that I can open beyond it. You know, so it could be anything. It could be, you know, metta itself. Like, where does metta come from? That metta is. I think it's fantastic that there's metta. I'm willing to be devoted to that. You know, I'm willing to devote this body, heart, mind process to metta. And whatever arises, I just give it to metta. Just give it to metta. Yeah, so I'm imagining that metta's a thing, it's a place, it's a location, it's something that can receive, it's maybe embodied in some way. Yeah, so some kind of, you know, I might need to change that view at some point, but I'm using it because it's useful. Yeah. Saying that metta is something metaphysical, transcendent, maybe the deepest nature of life. When I feel free, metta feels to be flowing. Yeah. You know, it could also be offered to our idea of, you know, Buddha or Buddha nature, you know, that seed of awakening that sits in all beings, or love, or God. I would say anything expansive, yeah, anything beyond this small self. And for me, at this time and place, I wouldn't recommend putting it on another human being. Yeah, I think something that's way, way beyond, yeah, really like limitless, limitless, and that kind of devotion to that really start to come through. Yeah. And again, you know, this absurd paradox, how it takes the strength of heart to be devotional. Yeah, it takes courage to be this humble. And you might even like kind of just want to just bow to that before we start our practice. You know, just like, wow, I'm willing to just bow to something more than me. Yeah. You can see for yourself if you want to do that or not. Yeah. What's the edge? What does that do to the heart? To take that posture. Yeah. And then we might find that that taps us into something more than ourselves, taps us into also a greater power. Yeah, so we're saying like thoughts are actually an energy, okay, and they will overpower us if we feel ourselves to be in a really small boat. A big wave comes to the small boat. Ah. But with that, somehow, with that feeling of devotion to something vaster, something more expansive, it's coming in, it's coming through. This is what we're practicing for. Yeah? Oof, bigger boat. It's a tiny little wave of thought, rising and passing, rising and passing. So there are many, many ways that we can relate to thoughts and thinking, many ways we can relate to phenomena. But maybe there is something helpful for us as living beings to be devoted to something vaster, something bigger. Yeah. Not a hierarchy. Whatever's useful. Imagination's powerful. Let's use it skillfully. Guide us towards what we really, really wish to bring into being.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.